Thank you, Maya. And I'm delighted to be here today to talk to you about research that we did at USDA in the Child and Adult Care Food Program. So first, my disclosure, I actually have nothing to disclose. So just quickly, in case you're not familiar with it, I'm going to just talk a little bit about the Child and Adult Care Food Program, CACFP, and then Tracy will be talking a little bit more about the program in her presentation. It is a USDA meal reimbursement program that is administered by state agencies or sponsoring organizations. So entities such as child care centers, family child care homes, adult daycare centers, as well as after school care programs or emergency shelters receive meal reimbursements for serving nutritious meals and snacks that meet the federal requirements. Some of you may know that actually right now there's a proposed rule that was published in CACFP that would change the nutritional requirements of the program. But at this time, we're still following this model where there are four components, meal components: milk, fruit, vegetable, grains, bread, and meat alternates. And depending on the meal or snack served, the program operators have to serve certain of those components in certain portion sizes to meet various age groups. So the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act actually expanded the purpose of CACFP to promote health and wellness in child care. And the USDA was mandated to provide technical assistance to child care centers and daycare homes to help them meet recommendations in terms of nutrition, physical activity, and electronic media use. So the minimum assistance that we were required to provide was to develop a handbook, which we did. This is a cover of the handbook there. It was published in July of 2013. And a little bit more about that will be coming later. And then we were also told that we had to provide any additional assistance necessary. But before moving on to create new resources or to modify resources that we already had, we wanted to have an idea from out in the field about what was actually needed in those areas of nutrition, physical activity, and electronic media use. So we conducted formative research in 2014, and these were the three big things that we were looking at. We wanted to determine what were the challenges that CACFP audiences had in meeting recommendations in those three areas. What types of resources did they need? Like, what types of skills did they need? What type of knowledge or information? And then finally, we wanted to know, how can we best get that information or resources to them? So what would be the best delivery method? Print, online, in-person, webinar, those types of things. So the research actually consisted of two phases, and we were looking at four CACFP audiences: state agencies, sponsoring organizations, child care centers, and the family daycare homes or family child care homes. So phase one consisted of an online or telephone survey, and you can see that we had just over 1,400 respondents to that, and that was out of over 13,000 survey invitations that were released. So to tell you a little bit about that, what we did is attempted to create a universe that was all state agencies, sponsors, centers, and homes that participate in CACFP across the nation. We didn't quite get 100%, but we got pretty close. Out of that whole group, we randomly selected those 13,000 to receive the survey invitation. So it was a random sample, and then we got just over 10% that agreed to go ahead and participate, which is a pretty good response. Phase two consisted of telephone focus groups, and the participants in those were randomly selected from people in phase one who said that they would be interested in participating in more research. So let me tell you, there's a few limitations to our research. One, it was formative research, which means that we were asking for people's viewpoints, perceptions, you know, they were telling us what they think. There is nothing observational about it. So nobody was actually going into our center or home to see were they really doing what they told us they were doing. Also, I just explained that, you know, the sample was random, but the people who chose to participate were self-selecting themselves. And you probably know, as I do, that when we get invitations to participate in some type of survey, we're more inclined always to do what we're more interested in, right? I think most of us would agree with that. So if we think that the people that participated were more interested in the topics could be more compliant. And then, of course, they were self-reporting, and all of us like to portray ourselves in as positive a light as possible. So those are things just to kind of take into consideration as we look at the results. Okay, there's a lot on this slide. This was just a snapshot looking at the different audiences. And in this case, when I do say providers, I'm talking about both child care centers and family child care homes. But one of the big takeaways here, and you'll see it later, is that state agency staff were very concerned that child care providers were not, that did not have knowledge to implement some of these recommendations, and also were not good models in terms of behaviors that we would like to see. But the providers themselves were really, really enthusiastic, wanting to do the right thing, wanting information. They're particularly interested in nutrition. So now I'll just briefly go through the different areas that we looked at. The big takeaway with nutrition is basically what I said, that the providers were very, very engaged on nutrition. They wanted to serve nutritious meals, and particularly they felt a big responsibility to try to serve the healthiest food they could to the children in their care, recognizing many of those children were from low-income families. And to the providers, they felt that the food that they got while they were in childcare could be the only food, literally, that they were getting all day. So they were just very enthusiastic, and it was very touching to hear them, what they said in the focus groups about that. So we did ask them if they were familiar with the dietary guidelines, and I have to actually say I was surprised that so many of the audiences were familiar, not surprised with state agency staff really, but the dietary guidelines are not a consumer publication. So I wasn't really expecting providers to be familiar with it, but they said that they were. You see a pretty good percentage said that they were. We also asked them what were the most important factors that they considered when they were choosing food and beverages to serve in their child care operation. So here's where you see a little bit of that disconnect between the states and the provider groups. So you see for centers and homes, the most important thing to them was that nutritional or health value of the food that they were serving, whereas state agency staff thought that cost would be the most important thing to them. Now, cost was a challenge, but they did not report that as the most important thing they thought of first when they were making those decisions. We also asked them how they served their meals and snacks. And we gave them a choice, either family-style meal service or pre-plated meals. You can see that really a majority, both of centers and homes, reported that they did serve family-style. Now, I will tell you that has not been seen in other nationwide research that's been done looking at this, where the percentage of ECE providers serving family-style is lower than that. But again, take into consideration a couple things. One, the audience, and because of the self-selection, we could have just it could have been a pool that was more likely to do that. And the other thing is that we did not define what we meant by family-style meal service, so they were kind of having to go by what they thought it was. And those of you that work out in the field probably know that for child care providers, what they consider family-style meal service can really run the gamut. Those are a couple of things as far as that goes. Then we also asked them to tell us how frequently they served certain foods the previous day. So a couple of things to note here with whole grains, you see that a very high percentage of both those provider groups said that they served whole grains at either some or all or most meals the previous day. And what I think was kind of encouraging is that the amount of fried foods or sweet snacks was relatively low. So we did, in this case, give them examples of what we meant by those different types of foods. So for whole grains, you can see that we specified what we were talking about with whole grains. But again, what we hear out in the field is that many providers think that they're serving whole grains, but they're not really serving whole grains because they're not really sure what a whole grain consists of. So I think that this shows that there certainly is an intent among them to want to serve whole grains. Whether they really are doing it or not is probably another question. And this would be an area that we would want to provide some technical assistance on moving forward. In terms of beverages served, as you would expect, because milk is a required component at breakfast, lunch, or supper in CACFP, you would expect that milk would be the most frequent beverage served, and I really don't exactly know why it wasn't 100%, but it was pretty close. And the other thing, though, that we think was encouraging here is that less than 1% of the providers reported serving sugar-sweetened beverages, fruit-flavored drinks, or sodas. So some of the challenges that they reported, as I said, cost of food did come up as a challenge. And also for the provider groups, child preferences, and you'll see in a little bit, parental preferences also were important to them. So in terms of training topics moving forward for nutrition, we did hear that they would like a lot of help with menu planning, recipes, particularly recipes that meet different cultural needs was important. Some suggested mobile tablets or apps that could help them with menu planning. Family style food service, again, something that providers in focus groups that they were not serving family style, they indicated they really wanted to learn how to serve family style and be successful with it. Availability of fresh food was important. There was talk about wanting to know more about how to have gardens in a child care setting. Cost we talked about, and then parental involvement, I just want to point that out because that was very important to them, to have materials and things that they could provide to parents to get that parental buy-in to what they were trying to do in their practice. So moving on to physical activity, the big takeaway here was that the providers thought that they were providing the recommended amount of opportunities for physical activity, but what they were doing was actually not the recommendation. They were actually falling short of what the recommendations were. So again, the intent was there, but they weren't quite getting it. And you can see that here in this chart that shows you, this is what they were reporting as the actual amount of physical activity time that they offered. So if you look at, for instance, ages 1 and 2, where at that age group, the recommendation is they should be getting more than 60 minutes a day of physical activity, but you see that just over a third were actually providing less than 60 minutes a day for that age group. Some of the things that they considered very important when they were making decisions about physical activity time were kind of across the board. You see safety concerns, caregiver to child ratio, and then for the provider groups, things like weather, space, or equipment limitations were important to them. In terms of challenges, those are things that come up again in challenges, the space limitations, cost of equipment, and for the family child care providers, one thing that came up is the mixed ages that they deal with. So trying to come up with activities to fit all the different ages that they could be caring for. Looking forward on physical activity training topics, providing them with examples or things that they could do to overcome the weather challenge and the space challenge is important. Again, that parental involvement was important to them. So moving on to the electronic media use, here kind of the big takeaway is that there was a lot less interest among the providers to actually get more training or information on electronic media use. They just weren't as interested in that. And also, as you can see right here, that electronic media use is pretty widespread in child care settings. So we defined electronic media use actually as any electronic media, including TV, video, DVD watching, electronic games, computer use, and the use of other electronic devices like cell phones. So we really kind of lumped it all in together. Now, one thing that came up, though, a lot was the educational benefit of some electronic media, particularly computer use. So for the providers, I think for us, for state agency people, for policy people, we're thinking that we need to teach them to cut down on how much electronic media use they have with the children in their settings. But for the providers, their concern was, were they providing enough exposure to electronic media use, particularly computer use? Because their concern is that preschool children, if they don't learn how to use a computer by the time they get to elementary school, they will be behind, okay? They really think that the kindergartners, and it probably is true, that those kindergartners are going to be behind if they don't know how to work a computer by the time they get to public school. So they really were looking at it from a totally different perspective, and that came out as we went along, too. So this slide here shows what's the percent that they were reporting actual electronic media use per day by age. And here's where you also see a disconnect between what they were doing and what the recommendations are. Because for under 2 years old, the recommendation is really none, no electronic media. And you can see that a good percentage did provide none to those age groups, but there still was a lot of people on the other side that were providing some type of electronic media use opportunities. And again, the research did not sort out in the survey that educational use versus other use, but it was discussed in the focus groups. So what did they consider very important factors here? Again, that caregiver to child ratio, important for providers. State agency staff and sponsoring organizations, you see that what they thought that it was that staff knowledge, a very important factor was how much did the staff know about the electronic media use recommendations. And what was interesting with the challenges is with the state agency staff that came up again, that lack of staff training is a challenge, that perception that electronic media use is educational. But you see that just over a third of the centers and homes actually said that they have no challenges. But so in this case, I'm going to say that I think the state agency staff was probably correct. There is a disconnect in the knowledge because of the fact that the providers didn't think that they had any problems, but what they told us actually showed that they were not following the recommendations for electronic media use. So obviously, we need to have some more training in this area. So one of looking at moving forward with training topics, so that educational piece, very important, sorting that out, what is appropriate electronic media use, what is considered educational, and then again, buy-in with the parents, because of course in this arena, the parents are supplying a lot of different electronic media to their children, and so it spills over. And so here I have a confession to make. That little guy on the screen is actually my grandson, who just turned 1 year old yesterday. He lives in Florida and I live in Washington, D.C., so the only way that I can really kind of see him is by Skyping him, which we do regularly, and believe me, he knows that smartphone and when you Skype. So I, yes, am guilty of contributing to electronic media use of a child that is less than two, but I think that that just shows a dilemma. I mean, this is only going to continue. Technology is not going to go away, and it is actually amazing what these little babies can do with a cell phone. So it's something to consider as we move forward. In terms of training, technical assistance and training and the preferred delivery channels, it was really all over the place. The key message here is that one size will not fit all, and as we move forward with resources, we need to look at not just print, but we need to look at online, we need to look at video, webinars, in-person, all of those things are important to those audiences. So this report is actually posted on our Team Nutrition website, and I have actually the brochure. I forgot I was going to pull it out later to show you. It's a nice little booklet. Many of those graphics in my slide presentation are in this booklet. And when you go on our website, teamnutrition.usda.gov, this is a page that comes up. That research report can be downloaded. However, if you really want some details about the research, if you click where it has click here, that takes you to a page where you can pull down the whole final report, the appendices, it has all the methodology and the survey questions and all of that, so you can really get into the weeds there with that. So now I just want to take a few minutes to talk about some of our team nutrition resources out of the national office at FNS. Okay, I'm going to have to be really quick. Okay, Team Nutrition is an initiative of the USDA Food and Nutrition Service. We support the child nutrition programs. So I talked to you about the nutrition and wellness handbook that we published earlier. We actually have some new supplements to that handbook to try to address some of the needs that came out in the survey. This supplement C was recently published over the summer. This deals with how to offer children new foods, so it's trying new foods. We have two more that are in design right now and will be coming out soon. One is creating a positive meal environment, and then we have one specifically on the family style meal service. These tri-day stickers and high-five stickers are just another way to encourage children to try different foods and eat a variety of foods. Discover My Plate is a kindergarten curriculum, but there are pieces of it that work really well with child care. There are these pictorial recipe cards so children can make their own recipes. We also have emergent reader books that talk about the different types of food groups in My Plate and teach sight words. And there is a song that they can download that can be used to dance around for a pulling in a physical activity piece. And those emergent readers can be purchased, or not purchased, nothing is purchased, it's all free, can be ordered, child care providers can order it in smaller amounts that would be appropriate for them, the home providers. We are also working on multicultural recipes to try to tie in that piece from the research. We have collected recipes that will be tested by volunteers, and then we'll have a contractor standardize them for us. Grow It, Try It, Like It is a garden-themed nutrition education kit that has been available for a while, but we're in the process of creating another version of it specifically for family child care, so make it a little bit better for that audience. And here in that revision, we're able to incorporate things like provide more messages for parents and provide movement activities every day. And Nibbles for Health are parent newsletters. All of these resources can be downloaded from the resource library at Team Nutrition website. And here I'll just kind of show you. You can sort by audience to get to child care. And for those that participate in child nutrition programs, print copies are free. And again, through our website, you can order those. Bulk copies, you can email us if you need more than the quantity listed. Just want to quickly tell you about a website we have through the National Agricultural Library. It's the Healthy Meals Resource System website that does have a piece dedicated to CACFP wellness resources. So I'm just clicking through real quickly. When you click on these categories, you get to where you can see the actual resources. And these are not just USDA, they're other government agencies, they're state agencies as well, sponsoring organizations. What's Cooking website is a great tool from USDA that you can search for recipes and even build your own cookbook. And last but not least, the Institute of Child Nutrition, formerly the National Food Service Management Institute, provides many, many resources for ECE providers. And I would encourage you to check those out if you're not familiar with them. So thank you very much, and we'll be taking questions at the end.